to People Like Us, a podcast for and about third culture kids everywhere. I'm Jen Mohindra. I'm also a TCK, and I have a Facebook group for TCK adults called, unsurprisingly, People Like Us. Hello, and welcome to today's episode of People Like Us. Today, I am delighted to be speaking with Chloe Donoghue. Chloe, hello, welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Jen, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. As always, and I know I always say this, but as always, I'm going to launch straight into the first question, and that is, would you like to tell me about where you grew up?
Yeah, so I was born in Ecuador. My mom is originally Venezuelan, and my dad is American and Canadian. They were working at international schools. So they were working at the international school in Ecuador when I was born there. We spent about 2 years there, I think, and then moved on to Romania, Thailand, and then Indonesia and Sumatra. And I'd say that's probably where I start to remember things, because everything before that, I'm not sure how much I remember. I was too young. Mm-hmm. Spent 7 years in Sumatra in Indonesia, and then went to Switzerland for 2, Ghana for 5. And at that point, I had finished the IB. And I decided to go to university in the States for 4 years. And then after that, I ended up moving quite a bit as well. But those are the different places that I grew up.
That's quite a lot of variety in there, from Ecuador, Romania, Thailand, Indonesia, maybe close there. But then to Switzerland, how old were you when you moved to Switzerland?
I was 10, maybe I just turned 11, because my birthday's in the summer. Okay. And we went at the start of the academic year, so I probably just turned 11.
Okay, so quite young still.
But yeah.
A big move.
Very big move. Sumatra, Indonesia was like almost growing up in a children's paradise, in that it was just so small that everyone was kind of friends with everyone. There was a lot of freedom to explore. There was a lot of outdoor space. I think the school actually was set up there because it was an oil camp, mm-hmm. Which meant that there was kind of this community where everyone kind of lived within about a 10-minute radius of one another. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, I look back at that now and I go, oh my gosh, I don't know how my parents did that. But as a kid, it was amazing. And so it was a very small community that I lived in there, very much focused around the jungle and outdoors and things like that. And then moving to Switzerland in Zurich, which was, as you've astutely pointed out, very different.
And then again, the next move to Ghana, that must have felt just like your world had turned upside down. How old were you when you moved there?
I had just turned 13. Yeah.
Ooh, so we were there for 2 years. Age.
Yeah. it was again another big move, actually. And I think there was a part of me, though, that was excited. And I do remember that. For as much as it was difficult and I had made such a strong friend group in Switzerland, growing up in the tropics always felt like home. Mm. So, you know, Switzerland is stunning, really. But it just wasn't what I was used to.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of me that was really keen to kind of get back, maybe a little bit more tropical. And so I remember being excited about that. But that's why I met so many other people as well. So, and in the end, it worked out.
Yeah, I can imagine. Switzerland is aesthetically a very beautiful country. But if it doesn't feel right, then it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I remember things like this sounds really silly, but I remember things like fashion kind of hitting me in the face all at once when I moved to Switzerland. In Indonesia, when I was just so young and it's such in the middle of the jungle, really, there was, to put it into context, I think there was about 50 students in the entire school. So just a really small community in the middle of nowhere. And that, I just wasn't really exposed to things like fashion. I wasn't really exposed to this kind of greater, larger world. And then so yeah, moving to Switzerland, it was aesthetically beautiful. And to be fair, the outdoors was also there and it was amazing for that. But yeah, it was very different from home, what home felt like at that point.
And then you mentioned making the decision to go to university in the United States. Was that a move that you made by yourself?
Yeah, it was. My parents were really supportive of me going where I wanted. I did look at universities in the UK, and I actually, just because I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life, the UK scared me being on the track. Whereas I knew if I went to the States, there's a bit more flexibility in changing majors or minors. Especially if I went to a liberal arts school. So that's what I ended up doing. I was really keen on being in a place that allowed some sort of flexibility and for me to explore in what I wanted to do. And the States offered that. And I think looking back on it, I was so focused on, finding the right school, that I didn't pay too much attention to the place. And I think that ended up meaning that I was quite quick to leave the States actually after as well.
Whereabouts in the States were you?
So I was in a very small town just north of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. I loved Pittsburgh and I loved my school and I loved my friends and things like that. But that was a huge adjustment to be going from Ghana
I bet.
to. To then a very small, very white, town in the States. And yeah, that took a huge learning curve with it, actually.
Sounds brave. So, what did people make of you when you arrived? I mean, here's this foreigner, not only a foreigner, but somebody who doesn't really come from anywhere and must have been a mystery to people.
There's one concept that I'm really into right now about being a TCK, and I think it's because it relates to this, and it's this idea of the hidden immigrant. And so at the time, I think my accent has changed a little bit since then, but at the time, for all intents and purposes, I sounded American, I looked American, but I didn't know what they were talking about most of the time. So I didn't really get any of the cultural references at the time. And certainly, I feel like I was just quite different from most people that I went to university with. So there was a very strange dynamic of, how do I explain this difference and to what extent do I want to explain this difference? So I would say it started out trying to be quite forthright with people and saying, oh, this is, I went to school in Ghana, my mom's Venezuelan, my dad's American, I was born in Ecuador. But I think there does come a certain point, at least for me, where I started to realize, okay, what's the abbreviated version I want to give here? What is a little bit overwhelming for the general population? Outside of TCKs. So I just started saying actually I was Venezuelan and American, which I quickly also realized was not helpful because I think they were used to Detroit, Miami, New York, somewhere, give me a place, a name, tell me what state it's in. And I wasn't able to do that. So it was a bit tricky in terms of trying to describe it to people, but I would say closest to me knew. And then after that, I was just kind of Venezuelan and American.
So how do you answer that question now, the much dreaded question of CCKs of where are you from?
I do get a little bit of a judge on the crowd as to like how much they really want to hear, I think is an important part. But what I tend to say actually is that I'm Venezuelan and American, but I moved around a lot growing up. And I kind of think it is that.
That sounds very familiar.
Well, because I think what I've found is that if I say that, then someone can ask the questions if they want. You know, they can go, oh, okay, you moved around a lot. Where'd you grow up? Or, you know, what places did you live in? But often I find that I think it's so unrelatable to a lot of people that they just kind of go, oh, okay, she moved around a lot. And then the conversation kind of continues on. And that's okay too, because I understand that not everyone's going to relate.
I'm smiling because that's one that I use as well to say, well, I'm half Scottish, I'm half Indian, but I moved around a lot growing up, and then sort of wait and see how people respond. And my friends around me might just be laughing because they kind of know what's coming next.
Yeah, I think I was actually at a housewarming this past weekend, and I think I said that exact line. And then someone asked, "Oh, okay, so where did you live?" And I just decided to go for the 7 years in Indonesia, because I felt, to be fair, that's where I've always felt a big drawing, like too. I've been always drawn much more to Indonesia. I think because I was quite young at the time. It's the longest I've lived anywhere. And then after when I went to university, my family moved back to Indonesia, to Jakarta. And they were there for another 7 years, I think. So I kind of just said Indonesia, and then I think that was sufficient enough as well at that time.
So, with your parents having moved back there and spending another good chunk of time there, did that kind of feel like a home base for you?
Yeah, I was so excited when they moved back. Even though it was such a different island, Java, in that, you know, Sumatra was very kind of, well, certainly back in the 90s, it was very like jungle, very isolated. Jakarta is this massive city. And even though it was different, it still had all the same elements that was homey. Little things like just the language as well. Or the ability to kind of go on all these little trips that we used to do when we were younger. So we were really excited about that and quite jealous that my younger brother got to continue high school there as well. Yeah, happy that they went back.
So university in the US, and you had your focus of your studies there, and you said that when you finish your studies, you got out of there. So where was next?
So originally I'd actually thought, okay, you know what, I'm gonna go to Miami, because that's where my older brother was. And I thought, you know, I'd been to Miami before and I'd really liked that it was just a huge melting pot of a bunch of different cultures that had kind of come from South America a lot or Central America. So I'd kind of gone for that. And then I decided, actually, you know what? My parents, as a lovely graduation present, had decided to give me the dive master qualification. So basically, I went back to Indonesia and I did that. So I lived on an island off the coast of Bali called Lemongan. And I got my dive master qualification, and then I stayed on working there for the rest of the season. So about 6 months or so I was there, kind of just guiding scuba dives after university. And after that, I had met some people who had told me about working holiday visas in Australia and New Zealand. And I thought, that sounds very cool. I'd like to do that. So I think right after university, I think what I really wanted was more adventure in my life. And I had been kind of missing out on the traveling and the difference and the, yeah, the excitingness of that kind of adventure. So I went to New Zealand, got a working holiday visa, and went there with the intention, and I did, of cycling the length of it.
Wow.
So I started at the very bottom. I started at the very bottom and went to the very top of the North Island. And it took, I think it was like 62 days of camping solid. And it was amazing. It was really amazing. A lot of hard work. But that's what I did with the first year after uni. Yeah, I think that's what I was needing at the time. Wanting.
As a keen cyclist myself, that sounds like an absolutely brilliant thing to do. So yeah, well done.
It was really fun. It does, yeah, there's a lot of difficult roads, as I'm sure you can imagine, through mountainous New Zealand. When you're carrying a bunch of stuff on the back of the bicycle, you have those moments of going, why did I decide to do this again?
Your crazy TCK sense of adventure kicked in.
I guess so. I'd never really, like, I'd ridden a bike before and things like that, but I'd probably never cycled more than, I don't know, probably an average of like 10K or something before that. So
brave.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. But then after that, I went to Japan. And I decided to follow my parents' footsteps by working at an international school there.
Okay. How was that?
Also loved it. Yeah, I did. I had never been to Japan before, strangely, given the amount of time that I had spent in Asia. And really enjoyed working at the international school. Realized, though, at that moment in time that I was not a teacher. Mm-hmm. But that I loved working with kids, at least a classroom teacher. I knew that I loved sitting down at a table with a few kids, maybe like two or three, mm-hmm. and really kind of sinking our teeth into something and working through something like that. But in terms of, you know, trying to manage an entire classroom of 27-year-olds, that didn't come naturally to me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I ended up deciding, I made the hard decision after a year there to leave, actually. But I did really enjoy Japan.
It sounds to me, what I'm hearing as I'm listening to you talking, that you've really been able to embrace the advantages of what we've had in terms of the nomadic upbringing, and to go to new places and really enjoy the experience. You know, a lot of people that, you know, I'm going to refer, I suppose, back to the sort of monocultural people, would find that an incredibly brave thing to do, to go and live in new places, and particularly somewhere like Japan, where, you know, the language is so different, the alphabet is completely different.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that's where there really is, I mean, in many areas you start to see a huge difference between third culture kids and monoculturals. But I think that is one of the more foundational ones, of just this kind of restlessness that people talk about, and the rootlessness. Mm. And I think that can be talked about in a way that has kind of a negative connotation, and going, you know, more serious questions of where you belong and impacting mental health and things like that. But I think there's also a really helpful and positive side to it that isn't really talked about enough. And I think that restlessness and that rootlessness gave me the ability to do things like that. You know, I think, had all of my family been in one place, and all of my friends been in one place and been, you know, that would have been difficult for me to leave. Mm-hmm. But the reality was that, you know, by me moving over to Bali, I was actually getting closer to some of my friends. Mm-hmm. By me going to New Zealand, I was also closer to some other friends. And So I think there's really cool bits of it, and I think if you lean into that, it can be really exciting. That said, now I haven't moved in 4 years, which is the longest I've ever stayed since after university. But yeah, I do think that that's really a cool part of being a TCK. It's okay to lean into it. And people do see it as different. And I remember some of my university friends from the States who were relatively monocultural being, well, what are you doing? Why do you keep doing this to yourself? But I loved it. I just did. And I was okay with that. Going with your gut.
So you had the benefit of being able to, that with your moves, you were able to get closer to people that you knew, friends, family. What else do you think helps you to lean in, as you say, and to really take advantage of the benefits of, you know, the nomadic upbringing, and therefore being able to move and enjoy different places, rather than sort of dwell on the negatives, you know, the thing, you know, you mentioned the rootlessness, the restlessness, and of course every TCK will know there are challenges with having that
absolutely
lifestyle.
Yeah, I had a lot of support to do that as well, in the sense that I didn't have parents that were like, why are you going so far, you know, what are you doing? They were really supportive of me going about and exploring and trying to figure out what it is that I wanted to do. They couldn't have been more thrilled with the idea, for example, of like cycling New Zealand. You know, my dad's really adventurous like that. So I think I was lucky in that way too, that I had a lot of support from my family. And I think, again, that would have been really challenging had I had parents that were like, it's probably time that you figure out exactly what you want to do. Your career. And you know, I was working really hard throughout all of it, so I'm not going to sugarcoat that either and say that I was just you know, popping around from here to there. I mean, in New Zealand I worked in a nursery, I worked at a restaurant. I was doing whatever I could to kind of save up the money to do it, but I think having that kind of support system there, that's keen for you to do all these things too. But I think also, and this has also been a recent learning, and I'm still trying to, I don't know, really squeeze everything out of it that I can, but embracing your difference. I've actually been reflecting on that a lot recently and thinking, you know, why is it that a lot of people in the UK don't know that I'm a TCK? You know, when I think about my friend groups here. Why is it something that I'm not really going, actually, this is what I am, and this is important to me that you know that. And kind of carving out more of a space for myself within that, instead of going, oh yeah, you know, I'm American Venezuelan and I've been here for a few years, sort of thing. So I think the more that you can kind of, you know, embrace that difference and be okay with it, knowing that there's nothing, a lot of things relating to TCK, and then a lot of the kind of social construction of these concepts that we think about, like home, they're just different for a TCK. You know, belonging, it's also very different. So, you know, most of society has socially constructed those things to mean, you know, home is a place. But it's not. It's not for everyone. And TCKs can kind of reconstruct that for themselves and going, okay, well, what's home to me? And a lot of the research shows that that's just about belonging in relationships, and with people. And that's how I feel too. So I think, you know, it's kind of taking ownership of that and going, okay, this is a bit different and that's okay. What does it mean for me? You know, so what does the rootlessness mean for you? And sometimes it is going to be, yeah, you know what, it's just awful. And I just wish that I could take all my different favorite places with all my different people and kind of put them into one and have that be a thing. And then other times it might mean, yeah, going out and searching that and finding it for yourself within the world. Yeah. I don't know if I answered your question on reflection, but that's the tangent I went on.
And something you mentioned there about home and belonging, how it's different for TCKs, and it's, you know, there are obviously topics that I often ask TCKs about, you know, what does home mean to you? What does belonging mean to you? And I would say that more commonly than not, home is about people. You know,
yeah.
Where feeling at home with your people, with your tribe, so to speak. So, of course, I'm now going to ask you, what does home look like for you?
Oh, man. Gosh. I know that people are a huge part of it. I think of like three friends that I have that really bring in the idea of home for me. I don't know if other TCKs relate to this, but I feel like I have levels of friends. And there are some friends that I just, they're more than that. They're just family. And I'd say those three friends kind of come into mind when I think of home. I also think of, you know, my brothers and my parents, when it comes to home, but also Indonesia is always going to have a bit of my heart. And I don't know that if I went there, that it would be like, okay, this is home. But I feel like that's the closest I might get in terms of a place in and of itself. But I think for me, it is really relational. It's very much in the relationships that I have with people.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you mentioned Indonesia, and maybe would it be different if you actually went there? Because I think sometimes we have this memory of a place and think, yeah, that's it. And then when you actually go back as an adult, it's like, oh, what's happening? It's not quite what I thought.
Yeah, you know, that's so interesting that you say that, because I was just reading about that the other day in a study where some people were kind of talking about how, I think they were talking about how they lived in Senegal, and the area that they had lived in had developed and changed so much from when they were a kid that when they went back, it was just kind of disappointing. Mm. And I think, you know, I think that about Sumatra. If I kind of went back to that same really small school in the middle of the jungle, would it be what I remember it? And probably not.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that doesn't want to go back and kind of just wants to keep it in memory. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think there is, you know, when I was reading about this other person's experience, I tried to think about what it would be like if I went there, and they did talk about it in a really heart-wrenching way of, you know, it's a home that they can never go back to. And for on this occasion, it was a place. Mm. And so I think that could be really destabilizing in thinking that you do have a place and then going there and
for sure
not having it be what you remember.
Chloe, we're coming up towards the end of our time here together. I've got one more question for you. And mm-hmm. that's, so you're in the UK now and you've been there 4 years, and obviously yeah. we've had a pandemic, and that's kind of put a halt on many people's plans. What's next yeah. for you?
Well, one of the big reasons I'm in the UK at the moment is because I'm doing my doctorate to be a counselling psychologist. So I've just started year two. Mm-hmm. So hopefully what's next for me is year three and then finishing it. So that's always going to be on the back of my mind, and keeping, yeah, hopefully, you know, doing everything I need to do to kind of wrap that up in a few years. I think too, I just recently started, and I reached out to Jen over Instagram, this page where I kind of started to share some of the things that I've been researching and reading and kind of learning about for TCKs and sharing them on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I really like to continue to do that and grow that community, because I think I get so many messages actually from TCKs going, there's so nice and so helpful to see something out there on this.
Absolutely.
And I have found, like, from my own self as well, of just going, you know, it's been so nice to share some of this, to interact with other TCKs, to kind of make it more normalized in and of itself. So I really want to continue with that. But I think ultimately I don't plan on staying in the UK forever.
Yeah.
I am keen once I finish my doctorate and I'm a psychologist, I'd love to work with TCKs. And I think the exciting bit of that for me is I can do that anywhere.
Absolutely. We have the technology and we can travel.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know where I'll be. But hopefully I'll be doing those two things.
Brilliant. Chloe, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really lovely to speak with you. And I'd like to wish you every success with your doctorate and your future career.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure being here. Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks for listening to People Like Us. If you'd like to join an online community full of people like us, hop over to Facebook and search for People Like Us. You'll find my group, and you're very welcome to join us.